Možeš tako malo da manipulišeš, brate.
Da li ću umem ja to da iznesem?
Ma brate, ja ti kažem pokušaj.
Ja vjerujem, ja vjerujem da ti možeš.
Poštovani gledalci i slušalci, dobro došli u novu epizodu podcasta 675, podcasta koji govori o košarci. Moje ime je Bogdan Milenković, a sa mnom kao i uvijek Luka Mihajlović. Trebaš dobro rašu.
Ćao, čao Bogdan, ne.
Sponzor ovog podcasta je Superbet.
I naša reklama sa Nikolom Jokić.
Superbet.
Kod Super 675 da prilikom registracije ostvarite super bonus.
Taj bezuslovni super bonus.
Link u opisu videa.
Super vibe za super bet.
Odgovorni super vibe za super bet.
Tako je.
Kod 6.75.
Euroleague TV čeka na vas.
Sve utakmice Euroleague i Eurokupa na jednom mestu.
Znači, hoćete da vraćate, da gledate opet, da gledate highlighte, produžne highlighte, a hoćete i da slušate nas kako komentarišemo utakmice, odnosno kako smo komentatori na utakmicama.
Sve to možete i uz naš kod, preko Euroliga TV-a i uz naš kod ostvarite 15% popust.
3660 dinara na godišnji pas sa našim kodom iskorišćenim. Uživajte.
A ne možete da se u zemlji ste gde ne funkcioniše naš kod?
Ili možda vam je preskupo u toj zemlji koji ste?
Surfshark VPN.
Rešava sve vaše probleme. Kliknite prvi link u opisu videa. Unesite kod 675 range, sve spojeno i osvojit ćete 4 mjeseca dodatna na Surfshark VPN. Vaša omiljena serija ili vaši omiljeni filmovi nisu možda dostupni na streaming servisu na kom gledate tu u toj državi odakle gledate. Uključite Surfshark, prebacite se na USA, na Nederland i sve je dostupno što želite da gledate.
Ukoliko vam se ne sviđa kupovina, imate mjesec dana da otkažete i novac će vam biti vraćen.
Tako je.
A kreće novi podcast, vreme za novi has.
Naručite preko Volt aplikacije i uz kod 675 range sve spojeno. Ostvarite 1000 dinara popusta na prve 4 poručbine. Važi samo ako prvi put naručite preko Volta ikada.
Prijetno.
Prijetno.
A prijatelji emisije?
Cafeteria.
Srećan 12. rođendan, braćo.
Srećan 12. rođendan, popit ćemo kafu.
Stefane. Sa nama danas legenda italijanske košarke, proslavljeni NBA igrač, šampion Porto Rika i nekadašnji rising star Euroligije, Danilo Gallinari. Hi Gallo and welcome to our humble show. First, how are you?
Everything is good. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be on the show.
We saw that you were a guest at a Denver home game. How was it for you being back in Denver?
It was great to see, you know, all the people that I work with for 7 years, to see Nicola, to see Jamal, that were my teammates when I was in Denver. So it was always great to be back in my second home.
So as we waited to start this podcast, you have a podcast too in Italian. That's we were talking about that beforehand with your brother as well, who is working for the Pistons. Do you see yourself maybe in the future working for an NBA organization, or maybe you got some calls already?
I have some meetings in the next few months to understand, you know, what could be a good position for me with the NBA teams. Of course, it would be great for me to stay in the NBA business. So we'll see. Probably more on the front office side, not coaching, but yeah.
Did you maybe have some talks about coming back maybe in the EuroLeague? Same front office positions or something? Did maybe coming back to Europe cross your mind after you finished playing in the NBA in the Puerto Rico?
Yeah, for me to come back, it would have been only with Milano, but there was no interest from Milano, so I didn't want to move the family again to play one or two seasons and come back to the States where we live. I would have done it only if it was for Milano. But we'll see, you know, in the future, my base is United States, so it would be tough to come back and just work for a team with the NBA Europe that is going to happen soon. But, you know, it would be interesting to see if there are any positions where I can remotely be of help.
So before we kind of shape this story around your career, we wanted to kind of get to some burning topics that probably would engage our audience, and that would be the most would be your Serbian teammates. You played with a lot of Serbians. You played with Bogdan, you played with Nikola, you played with Boban as well.
Milos.
Yes, Milos. I think you overlapped with Darko six games. Yeah. So what, from your like standpoint, what do all Serbians have in common, basketball wise?
Competitive and knowledge of the game. I think that competitiveness is something that is common for every Serbian that I played with. The fact that, you know, wanting to win at every cost, I think is the biggest thing. And of course, the knowledge of the game, understanding the game and playing the game the right way. So these are the two main things.
You were there for Jokic's first two seasons. What was your reaction seeing Jokic in a league where at that time it was not common to see a guy like that?
No, I think, you know, Nikola was, I didn't expect Nikola to be the best player in the world, but of course I saw that he was going to be a very good player, especially the second season. He was already doing triple doubles, and you could see that the game was gravitating towards him offensively. And so, you know, you could see that he was going to be a great player.
You said that you gave him advice. That's in one of your interviews. That when he had that first triple double, you said like, okay, that's great. Now you have to do it again and again and again. So how much of a trade was important to get? Like, I remember when Nurkic got moved, Jokic kind of got the keys to the organization. In a sense, you're our main center, definitely, because I remember it was 5-4 Nurkic Jokic at the same time. I remember Denver tried a lot of things with both of them. How important was it for him to get that shot? And do you see it maybe his career going a different way if he didn't get that shot?
Yeah, for example, yeah, for sure. I mean, I think when you are a special player, also, if you're not a special player, sometimes you have to be at the right time, the right place, at the right moment. And of course, it was a rebuilding situation. And so the franchise was looking for new talent, new young guys. And they made the choice of going with Nikola instead of Yusuf. And they both, you know, having great careers. Yusuf is in Utah now doing triple doubles too. So two very good players that they have to be I think they have to be sent the center for in the position for the team. I don't think that, of course, they can play together, but to really experience their best, they have to be the starting center of a team. And so I think it was great for Nikola. It was great for Yusuf that went to different team and be the center, starting center of a team.
And is it true you didn't sign his first triple-double ball?
We got that from Reddit. You and Yusuf didn't sign the ball.
I don't remember, to be honest. Nikola said this.
No. I just read, it's a Reddit thread, like Gallinari and Yusuf didn't sign Jokic's first triple-double ball. And I read that a couple of days ago while preparing for this, and I was like, oh, this is an interesting topic.
No, I don't remember. If Nikola asked me, I signed it for sure. So it's I don't remember.
Let me just quickly segue to Miloš, because Miloš is kind of the goat of our podcast. We have a running meme about Miloš already a couple of years running. So when he came to the Clippers, did he have that same like rookie treatment? And why is the answer already no?
I think the rookie treatment for him was not by his teammates, but it was from the league. So when he was playing, the referees were not giving him favors. When Miloš played in Europe, you cannot touch him. So this is the biggest difference for Miloš when he came. But as far as us, of course, me knowing Miloš and playing against Miloš, I played against Miloš. I was 15, 16 years old in Serbia, in Belgrade. We played the semifinal of the European Championship. So I played with Miloš since I was a little kid. So I know everything about Miloš. My teammates, some teammates, they knew about Miloš. So as far as teammates, nobody treated him as a rookie, because everybody knew that he was already a legend, you know, in Europe.
As you came very young to the NBA, what are your thoughts on how difficult it is? You mentioned referees, you mentioned coaches. How difficult it is to a player that's already certified in Europe, like we had Spanoulis, we had Diamantidis came, how difficult it is to adapt to different situations in the NBA?
It's very difficult when you come to when you are older and you have accomplished everything in Europe. It's tough to understand that you have to do everything from the beginning, you have to start from zero. And it's not easy mentally when you are older. It's way easier when you are 19, 20.
And did Miloš wait too much to come to the NBA? What do you think?
Probably. I mean, I don't know if he had chances before, but I think that when the chance came, he came when he had the chance to play and be part of a team where he had the chance to play minutes. It didn't work out great for him, but everybody has their own timing in their career. So Miloš is a legend, and he's a legend for everybody.
To bring the focus back onto you, we wanted to first talk about that first club title for you in Puerto Rico last year. So how was that feeling for you getting ready for an NBA season? You mentioned Carlos Arroyo gave you the call to come to Puerto Rico. How was the feeling of winning that first club title and generally playing in Puerto Rico?
The feeling was amazing, of course. When you win, it's always a great feeling, and to do it in the way that we did it with the team and the way that I was able to play at the highest level was great. And the Puerto Rico championship is great, because I didn't know anything about it, but the level is very high. When I came in last year, they changed the rules from two, they called them imports, from two Americans to three Americans. So the level, of course, got higher. When I went for example, in Orlando last month for the winter showcase of the G League, there are so many players that in the G League they played in Puerto Rico as Puerto Rican. So it's very high level, very competitive with the FIBA rules, FIBA referees. So it was tough. And so to enjoy the grind and to be able to win was amazing.
Did you have any EuroLeague offers?
I did. I had offers from EuroLeague, from Italy, from Japan, from China. So I had a lot of offers after my year, but I decided to stop.
It's a shame we didn't get a couple of more years of EuroLeague U, because I kind of like it when like players get to those 34 or 35 years and come back, especially into their home teams. Like I'm kind of campaigning for Bogdan to come back for Partizan. I don't think that's gonna happen, but it's interesting to see
Bogdan seasons. Is definitely coming back to Partizan.
Oh, this is gonna be all over the news, probably, what you said right now. Yeah,
but this is good soundbite.
Bogey is coming back.
Okay. Okay. If you said it, you said it first. You said it first. Maybe also after us. Yeah. So we wanted.
But EuroLeague is old competition. Old competition. Now players play with 36, 37 years. You can back now if you want.
It's too late. It's too late.
Oh no. We can get you a couple of offers. Till the end of this season for Partizan, 100%. I could get you 1 million till the end of the season. Guaranteed. That's guaranteed money. You talked about your best seasons in the NBA being that third season in Denver, the second season in LA, a year in OKC, and the first year in Atlanta, I think. So having those years in mind, we kind of wanted to focus the story around them. When did you think you were at your peak?
I think my peak was that season in Denver, right before I tore my ACL, right before playoff. That was definitely my peak. And then, of course, when I was in LA and OKC, I had two amazing seasons with the team and individually. Body-wise, of course, was not my peak. I was very mature as far as mentally as a player. But as far as body-wise, of course, my third year in Denver, that's what I felt the best. And then, you know, my year in Atlanta was the year that we went to the conference finals. So as a backup coming from the bench, of course, it was not my peak as player, but it was my peak as team results. It was the first time going to the final, the conference finals.
You mentioned Denver, 38-3 at home. Was that season the injury before the playoffs was a huge kick for the team. You mentioned that you could have got out maybe from the West. Miami was at the other side, and you had two very close games against them throughout the season. Do you have it going maybe differently if you stayed healthy and if everything went smoothly? Do you think you could give them a run? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, of course. I think you know, we were third in the West, one of the best teams in the West. The West was more competitive than the East back then. And in the second round, we would have played against San Antonio, who was number one. But during the season, we won three games and they won one. So it was 3-1 for us. Of course, you play against legends in San Antonio, but we were a very fast-paced team. They were half-court team. It would have been a great matchup. And so, you know, I think we had our chances if we were stayed healthy. But, you know, health is the main factor when you get to the playoffs. The healthiest team usually is the team that wins.
You mentioned the pace. The Denver team was the first in the pace that season. If you were a rookie in today's NBA game, how do you think your play style will be different?
But I think that every team try to play very fast right now. So you know, as a rookie, in my case, you know, I'm very versatile, so I can play in very different styles of playing. So it would have been good for me anyway, especially with all the 3-point shooting that there is nowadays compared to 20 years ago, 15 years ago. So it would have been great for me.
In that Clippers uniform, I think you had 20 a season for one season. How many would you score today in today's pace?
I don't know. It's you know.
Don't
it's
be humble. Tough. Don't be humble.
I think it'll be between 20 and 25.
And you didn't like to shoot much. That's very interesting to me. You had like 20 on like 12 shots, I think, something like that. Yeah, that's
yeah. The best scorer that season was James Harden, and he was shooting 30 shots a game. So I think you know, analytics today with all the analytics guys, I will let you guys do the calculation. But if I shoot 30 shots a game, how much I would average?
Yeah, I think James averaged 37. So I'll give you 40 if you're efficient. Yeah. So not many teams can say they went toe to toe with the Warriors in their Steph Durant era. You guys were down 31 in that second round, I think, while being on the Clippers. Can you talk to us throughout that game two and that comeback? You hit major shots in the fourth quarter. How is it going against a historic team? You had 24 and Lou Will had 36, I think.
Yeah, you know, it's when you play against those teams, you know that you don't have a lot of chances, right? So you don't have pressure. Everything that you do, it's okay. And so we were down so much, but then the game, some games is all about momentum. Sometimes when the momentum is in your favor, anything can happen. And so you can win against the best teams. That happened during the game. Down by 30 and then by 20 and then by 10. And all of a sudden you have the confidence and that you can win the game and anything can happen. And we did it. So it was pretty, pretty cool.
KD had 50 in the closeout game. Do you have moments against that team where you felt helpless?
Yeah, we, other than the two games that we won, we felt helpless in all the other games. So it's when you play against, in my opinion, one of the best team in the history of the game. It's always tough, and when you play against KD, he had the 35 in the first half. I think that game, we changed matchups, team defense, we changed everything, but we couldn't do anything. So
yeah, everybody was guarding at that game. I saw highlights like you, Garrett Temple, Harrell. Everyone tried. But you played against a lot of you played in a super team era. Let's call it like that. You faced off against a lot of teams. What would you give? What super team would you give like the advantage that was the best? Like the Heatles also were a great team. But is that Steph Durant team up just unfair?
Yeah, I think it's unfair. I think it's unfair. As you all know, if KD and Klay Thompson don't get injured, Toronto doesn't win the championship against
exactly.
them. So they would have another championship under their belt. So yes, it's unfair.
Going to kind of the OKC talk, you were part of two historic trades, we would say. First one is Melo to New York. You went to Denver. The second one, of course, is Shai, you and 1,000 picks for Paul George. How early did you learn like the NBA is a business? Like you mentioned also after a couple of seasons in New York, you hoped like maybe you would stay your whole career in New York. But how fast did you have to adapt to kind of being it a cold business?
You have to adapt very fast. It was a shock at the beginning because I thought I was going to play in New York for, I don't know, 10, 15 years. But, you know, the NBA business, it's a very fast, big turnaround, a lot of players. And so you have to be able to adapt because you need to survive in the business. If you don't adapt, you don't survive.
While preparing for this talk with you, we only saw how many game sevens you played. In OKC, first round with Houston went to the seven. What were the expectations that year from OKC? And did you anticipate them having this kind of success they are having right now?
I anticipated the success because I know Sam Presti. And so Sam Presti is... He's a unique character. He's a genius, and so he's able to do everything as far as building a team. So I knew they were going to be successful. That season, they didn't give us a lot of chances to make the playoffs. We made the playoffs, and then we go to the game seven during the bubble in Orlando. It was an amazing run, even with OKC, because we thought we had a good team as players, but a lot of people, I think they have us winning, I don't know, 30 games, 35 games, and we went to the playoffs. So
And how much did that bubble disrupt everything? Like how much we heard a lot of things about the bubble. We'd like to ask about that later. But how much did the bubble disrupt everything? And how difficult was it to adapt on playing like basically an AAU tournament or basically a FIBA tournament?
Yeah, it was a very different. I love the bubble because we're playing a lot of basketball. I was playing golf every other day, spending a lot of time with my teammates. I loved it. It was very particular because you get tested twice a day, COVID, but it was very safe. We had a lot of things that we could do outside of basketball. And then we're spending a lot of time in the gym doing what we love. So I loved it.
So we heard the whole bubble used to smell of weed. So we're looking to confirm this with other people that went.
I confirm.
Okay. Okay. So Nikola, Shai didn't have that, let's say, superstar start of his NBA career. So did you notice any glimpses of him? You played together in Los Angeles as well. Did you notice any glimpses that this was about to happen? Obviously, in OKC, he had mentors with Chris and Schroeder, I think, also played at the same time. It was much easier for him kind of to get in that point guard flow and into that scoring flow for OKC.
Yeah, for sure. But my second season with him in OKC, but also in L.A., we saw it as players. We knew it was going to be very good. That's why we told the organization that we didn't need much more to win with that team. But, you know, the past, they decided to go for another route. But Shai was amazing.
Were you disappointed not to stay in OKC? You and CP3 looked like they're veterans.
Yeah, I mean, OKC was great for us. We loved the team. We loved the group, so we wanted to stay together. But we knew that something was going to happen.
Yeah, then the next year they went, I think, the Al Horford route for their veteran. I think he was the only one as like an older guy. Now, if you look at it, they don't have veterans. They are all transitioning to being vets. What was the general feeling in that Atlanta team at the beginning of the season? It was not a great start. I think Lloyd Pierce got fired 30-40 games in. How did that team make a recovery and end up in the East Finals?
I think Nate McMillan did a good job as a new coach. He was very straightforward with Trae Young, with the players, we had some injuries and saw some guys like Solomon Hill and Tony Snell. They had to step up and play important roles. They were very good role players to play with Trae Young. So we were just able to get to build a very good chemistry during the season.
That playoff run that year, it was kind of stunning to watch as a fan standpoint. You beat New York, you beat Philadelphia, and eventually you lost to the champion, to the Bucks. So we mostly wanted to focus on that Philadelphia series. Things got heated between you and Joel. And after that dunk at the steal in Game 7, you pointed to yourself. So what were you saying in that moment to yourself? It looked like I'm him. It looked like that.
I was saying that I'm first team all defense.
Like a Tony Allen.
Like Tony Allen.
And are you the one responsible for the downfall of Ben Simmons?
You went for the steal.
You went
I
for
think,
the steal.
They say I am. I would put it more on the Atlanta Hawks than just me, but yes.
But how did that series go for you? Did you guys have the confidence that you can make it out of the East?
Yeah, we had the confidence because after, you know, you go to the playoffs and all these young guys are like, wow, we are in the playoffs. And then you win the first round. They're like, wow, you win the first round. We were fifth seed. New York was fourth. So we go and play on their their court and we win. And then so by that time, you have the confidence to do everything.
Yeah. It looked like that. It looked like that.
Let's talk a little about Europe. Do you follow EuroLeague a lot?
I do.
Oh, so which teams do you follow the most? You mentioned Milano. Is Milano the are Italian teams generally the one you follow the most?
I follow in general, or I always watch highlights. I see the results. So I like to watch the games when I can. So it's not just Milano. Of course, I now Pepe Poeta is one of my best friends, and he's the coach. So I, of course, I really like following them, but I follow the EuroLeague in general.
How well do you remember that lockout season? A lot of NBA players came back, especially not some Europeans as well. We had some surprising signings, like Deron Williams went to Besiktas, I think. But how well do you remember that lockout season? And can you compare like kind of that EuroLeague to this EuroLeague today? Like that was, I think, 2011 season to EuroLeague today. What do you see generally being the difference?
Well, I think it's very similar because the level is so high. Every team plays to win, and every team has very good teams. You need to play at your best every game. If not, you risk to lose. So I think it's very high level. Probably the biggest difference is that they play more games now than what we played in the past. The schedule is a little different, but in terms of level, it's very high level.
As a Partizan fan, I can't not ask, do you remember that comeback in Milano being up 25 in the last quarter?
Yeah, I remember that game. Unfortunately, it was not a good game for us. But I'm glad that I wasn't part of the, because I left for the States, but we came to, I think, to Partizan, and we won that game to qualify for the second round that season. I didn't play that game because I
you
was
left,
already.
Yeah, you left for that game.
Yeah.
I remember
yeah, yeah.
that. Yeah.
Your thoughts on the state of Italian basketball? Only one player in the NBA, in the EuroLeague, there are some prospects, but not as much as before.
I think there are some Italian players coming up. I think in the next 4 or 5 years, you're going to see more players in the NBA and EuroLeague. I think, of course, is going to take time, ups and downs, of course, during the history of a federation, of a country. Few countries have the, you know, they're so good that they always have players, a lot of players in the NBA or the EuroLeague. But you know, I'm excited for the new generations, and hopefully to win something for Italy, and for me to be just watching. It's great to see these young guys growing.
And is the Italy national team right now going to that generational switch? Like, I think the only kind of the player that I remember the most that is still in the national team is Nicolò Melli.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's Nicolò Melli, and of course now Simone being the only NBA player that we have. But I think it's definitely going through that phase. But we have also some other young guys or players in the EuroLeague that I think they're going to play bigger roles in the national team. So I'm very hopeful for the future.
To go back to your kind of rookie phase in New York, you were booed, of course, at the draft. And you mentioned getting some boos even after you were sitting out the first part of the season. You sit out most of your rookie season. How tough was it to you to get in that mindset to turn those boos into cheers?
It was a big motivation for me. It was huge motivation because I was like, okay, these people, they have no idea who they are booing. They don't know what I can bring to the table. So it was very good motivation for me. When I came back the second season, I was thinking about that before every game.
And what is your opinion about Knicks fans? Knicks fan base.
I think they're great. I mean, to play at the Madison Square Garden when you win is amazing. Probably one of the best arenas to play. Also, as an opponent, when you go to play in New York, is always a great environment. But they're tough. They're tough. If you don't win, if you don't perform, they're gonna let you know. And so it's good.
Throughout your career, you went against a lot of talented players: Kobe, LeBron, KD, etc. When you were young, were you ever starstruck, maybe by some matchup that you had, like to go up against on a Tuesday night?
Yeah, by Kobe and LeBron for sure. You know, it was especially by Kobe. But then when somebody scores 61 point on you, you're gonna wake up very early and understand that you gotta be a player too, you know.
That can be a long night. A long night.
Yeah.
A classic basketball question. You mentioned Kobe, but maybe you have a moment that you have. What is your, like, welcome to the NBA moment?
I think my first season I didn't play that much. So my second season we played a week where it wasn't just one moment. It was a week where at home. We played against Boston, Cleveland, and Lakers. And in 1 week, we lost by 30 against Boston. We lost against LeBron, who scored triple-double with 55 points. And Kobe, we lost against Kobe, that scored 61 points. So that was a very tough week and tough welcome for me.
You mentioned Jamal Crawford being your most influential teammate. We had an interview with Janan Musa that also played in Brooklyn. He mentioned Jamal giving him like great veteran advice when he was there. Why did you think he was your most influential teammate?
Probably because he was always talking a lot to me. He really took me under his wing and gave me advices every time we were hanging out, also outside basketball court. So it was a guy that was helping me a lot.
How important is that culture that NBA has, like having the right veteran at the club you're getting drafted? Jokic also mentioned to us, like, Mike Miller was there for him, I think, at the beginning of of his career. You always have to have someone that's around for you, the right guy that's around for good values, especially.
Yeah, I think it's very important. Every team, every NBA team does that. So every NBA team gives one or two positions to veterans to be mentors, and so I think it's a great plan. You need it, and as a young guy, it can help a lot.
And you were part of very good 28 draft class. Did you know other talented guys like Rose, Russell Westbrook, Kevin Love?
Yeah, we were with Russell and D Rose. We were represented by the same agent, and so this summer we spent a lot of time practicing together. So we know each other very well, and since the beginning we had a very close relationship. And so yes, practicing with them every day for 2 months in LA in the summer, it was pretty amazing.
And what kind of was the biggest shock for you when you crossed that EuroLeague rising star of the EuroLeague to coming to New York, where you mentioned that assistant coaches didn't even know what you could do? That was kind of shocking hearing back, because now is such an analytical time that everything the assistant coaches should know about the player they're drafting, and just kind of the different times back here and back then and now. How would you compare those times?
Yeah, very different times. Like you said, they didn't know much about me. Now, as soon as you step into the gym, they know exactly what you do. But they also know what you have to work to develop. And so development was not as big when I came into the league as it is right now. So very two different times.
Yeah, but probably you had to check what to develop by yourself back then.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
You have a very good teammates. We want to hear you. What is your top five teammates?
Wilson Chandler, Lou Williams, Bogdanovic, Nurkic, Feni Iguodala.
That's a good starting five. That's a playoff starting five.
Bogdan is in and Jokic is out.
You know,
only because Bogey offered me a lot of dinners, and Jokic, I had to pay for dinners.
Okay, so we know when to bring money, when to not. That's good. Yeah, thank you so much, Gallo, for the time. We kind of had a flow to cover everything. Thank you so much, and good luck in your hopefully new MBA job.
Hvala, brate.
Hvala tebi.
Thank you.
See you.
Ćao.
Nadam se da ste uživali u ovoj kratkoj priči sa Danilom Galinarijem.
Imali smo čovjeka na kratko, uspeli smo nešto bar da izboksujemo. Ali eto, čuli ste se, Bogdan se vraća. To ste bar čuli.
Pa malo li je.
Pa malo li je.
Malo li
je. Malo li je.
Tako da lajkujte ovu epizodu, komentarišite.
Kliknite subscribe i udarite zvonce da sve vidite prvi.
Zapratite nas na društvenim mrežama, tamo gori.
Tamo gori, idemo na 90k na Instagram, poguramo to malo i idemo na, ja mislim, 40k na TikTok.
A do sljedećeg viđenja, doviđenja, prijatno, čao, vidimo se.
Vidimo se, bye bye.